KMIH Mercer Island, 88.9 The Bridge.
Welcome back to KMIH Mercer Island. You're listening to The Bridge. I'm here today with an absolute legend in Mercer Island High School boys soccer, the coach of many very talented soccer teams, and a long-standing coach within a very successful program. I'd like to welcome Bill Hansen to 88.9 The Bridge. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Riley.
How many years have you been a part of the program here at Mercer Island?
Let's see, I started here in 2004, so this would be my 14th season.
Very nice. And now within that time, you've coached some very successful players. Within that group, who stands out?
You know, realistically, there's a lot of players that stand out in my memory.
Absolutely.
And it's not necessarily based on their success, but it's based on their person and the way they work. The people that come mostly to my mind, Andrew Mead, Mitchell Mead's older brother, was always one of my favorites, and that was 13 years ago that I had him on my team, and I'll always remember that young man. There was Jake Berman, also graduated several years ago, and this was back when I was coaching the C team.
Mm-hmm.
There's just one moment in my life where he completely stands out from something that he said. He had been a player that had quit playing Premier League soccer because his parents were pushing him, and he got tired of the game. Came out as a sophomore, and his friends were like, "You're really going to like playing for Dozer." And they brought him out, and he came out and made the team. Just the greatest kid. And he was so fast and so good with the ball, but just was really hard in the last third pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
And taking the shot. So one day I told him, I said, "Dude, you hold onto the ball so long, if they hit you in the box, just go down, okay? We'll get a goal out of it," because he just couldn't pull it. So one day they hit him in the box up here on the JV field, and it's hard enough that it was real, so he went down.
Yeah.
And he stood up, and they called a penalty kick, and we scored the goal, and he came running over onto the sidelines to me so happy. He goes, coach, do I get the Italian assist for that?" The Italian assist will forever stand out in my memory as one of the greatest moments of my career.
Yeah. Well, you know, within that time, Mercer Island was home to a very successful soccer player now. I know you had a chance to be on the coaching staff while Jordan Morris played here at Mercer Island.
Who?
Jordan Morris.
I've heard of him.
I think he's gaining a little buzz, you know. Did you ever think when he was here at Mercer Island that he would have a chance to play professionally and even go on to start on the U.S. men's national team?
In all honesty, yeah. It was something that Steve and I had discussed because we knew the kid when he was a seventh grader coming out, hanging out a little bit, because his older brother Chris played for us.
Yeah.
And Simo is what we called his older brother. He was a great ball player. Went on to play at SPU for 4 years. Great guy and great family. And with that kind of support and leadership and care system that you have, great things are destined for you no matter what they are. Chris is going to be successful at whatever he chooses because of the way he was brought up. And there was no reason that Jordan would not follow in that same sort of path. With whatever path he chose, he was going to be good. And we knew, and you could see his talent and his speed and his heart and his desire and attention to detail that he had from a young age. I mean, when I first met Chris, it was like, "Wow, you are so good at this. This is going to be awesome seasons for us." One of the first things he said to us was like, "Wait till you see my little brother." So we had an inclination for a first few years before he even got in the program. And once you saw it, it was like, okay, this kid has five gears like everybody else. And then he shifts into sixth and can still turn at that pace. And it's just like, this was next level stuff that we had seen at the program that I had ever seen. And I grew up watching Giandre Yedlin play.
Yeah.
Another national team player.
Yeah,
playing at Newcastle right now. One below the EPL.
Ah.
But my son grew up playing with him. So I've had the opportunity to see some really standout players at a young age. And with Jordan, you always knew it. If that's what he wanted, he was going to be there.
Yeah.
Now to see him win the equivalent of the Heisman Trophy in his junior year, to win a college national championship, to win a MLS championship, to be Rookie of the Year, it's been great to watch, and I'm just so happy that everything he's worked for seems to be coming together for him.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked a lot about the different characteristics and traits that he had when he played here. What would you say it takes to make a successful Mercer Island soccer player besides, you know, skill on the field?
Well, if you want, let's just use Jordan as an example. Jordan is the epitome of a team player. Jordan knew what he was, but he was very humble and still is, was willing to learn and from anywhere, and was willing to share all of it with his teammates. He knew that it wasn't just him. And he's the kind of kid that when he knew what he was, his goal was not to score goals and win games for Mercer Island as much as it was to make the players around him look better and give them the opportunities to succeed and be the ones that had the limelight. His work ethic, his work rate, his involvement with his community and his family, his continued standard of achievement for both his grades and his person and how he interacted with the others and his community really were the types of things we were looking at for this program. There have been quite a few players throughout the years in all formats and all levels of skill that exemplify what we believe this program symbolizes. And Steve Newman, who was here before Colin, was here for 20 years. There's a fund that we have a scholarship set up, the Steve Newman Foundation. And what that does is that recognizes one of those standout players and people every year, and we send them on an excursion in the summer. We've sent people to spend a week with Sporting Kansas City, staying with the coaches, living with the team, on the bench, during games, at practice. What is this experience? We've sent people to Philadelphia Union. It's been Dallas. And the person that wins that is the one that's demanding of himself in his schoolwork and things outside of soccer, his passion for the game, how hard they work at it, and how well they interact and lift up the teammates and the people around them. Realistically, we all know soccer's great. Soccer's wonderful. But what you're going to be, whether you're a professional soccer player or not after this program, whether you go to college or not after this program, we know 100% sure that you're going to be an adult and you're going to be involved in society, right? So soccer, and me personally, I feel this way throughout all of the levels that I coach, from the rec clubs through the Premier League teams that I've coached through high school ball. I've coached everywhere. the opportunity to use soccer as a tool and a teaching lesson, because it's what I know, to make young men become young men and not have to go through some of the pitfalls and stumbles that I had to go through along the way to figure out what it took to be a modern, grown-up human being that interacts in a modern world and society in a positive fashion. And what we teach is work ethic, involvement, passion for whatever it is you do. You know, you get out of this what you put into it. Same thing with your schoolwork, same thing with your job. You're going to have to deal with competition throughout the rest of your life, whether it's getting a job, getting a raise, anything like that, to how do you interact in relationships with my family, with my sisters, with my wife, with my kids. What example do I want to be? How do I live that example? And how do I continue to carry that on? For me, having coached so many teams and so many kids over so many years, the responses I get from them and watching them grow up and seeing them on Facebook now 20 years later, getting married and inviting me to weddings, I feel like I've made an impact and the way that they live their lives and how they're going to be teaching those around them.
Absolutely.
From the top of Mercer Island to the bottom of Mercer Island, it's 88.9 The Bridge.
Having coached at Mercer Island for 13 years and having countless other years involved within the sport, you obviously enjoy the sport of soccer. What would you say it is about soccer that has enticed you so much for so many years of your life?
Well, I think early on, I liked to be different. Everybody wanted to play football and baseball and basketball, and I was never the superstar in any of those. I was a really good swimmer. Didn't care. But soccer was the different sport when I was young, and we're talking early 70s. I realize I'm dating myself, but I started playing soccer in 1972. It was different then, and in my community where I grew up, it was still fairly popular because there was a lot of immigrants from Northern Europe. So that's what started me on it. When I discovered the beauty of it was shortly after high school, and when I got to play at a higher level, when I met people from all different countries, people that didn't speak English, and we could still speak soccer, I realized that it was a great, like music in a sense. It's something that transcends language, age, race, creed, religion. It was a universal thing. And moving into the part where it became into coaching, I realized it was the least exclusionary of any sport. I didn't need to have a court with a hoop. I didn't have to have a stick and a mitt. I didn't have to have helmets. It was something that all it took was an object and some kids of different numbers. It could be 3, could be 2, could be 12. Just you and me in the neighborhood with a ball of tape. I've played soccer at work in the warehouse with a ball of tape with guys, Mexicans, that are employees, and the Filipinos and the Vietnamese at lunch. 5-on-5, all playing together. None of us have anything in common because we all come from different places except for this game and the place that we worked.
Yeah, a lot of people call it, you know, the sport that unites the world.
Yep.
And you can absolutely see that within professional leagues where you have players who don't even speak the same language.
Right.
Taking the field together and playing as one.
Right. Their coach doesn't even speak the same language in some circumstances. And from those great international fields to warehouses on the south side of Ballard, it truly is something that unites and can be a positive interaction and something that really brings people together.
You talked about a little bit when you played, when you were younger. Did you ever play outside of your high school team, if you played on your high school team?
I actually blew my knee out in my freshman year.
For high school?
Uh-huh. I got hit by a car.
That's quite the experience.
So I didn't play in high school at all.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't start playing again until I was 20. I was extremely frustrated with the fact that I couldn't play and had already grown to love the sport. So I went and joined a men's league and was lucky enough and still good enough that I was able to play in around here at the first division for men's leagues, which is, you know, la-ti-da compared to college and everything else. But in those days, there weren't a lot of restrictions, and I was playing against college players. I was playing against players and with players that went pro when the MLS came, that went to the WSL and the USL to play for the Sounders. I had an opportunity in my life, and I feel very gifted and lucky and grateful to be able to have played with players that were so much better than me at times that they got to make me a better player and make me really love the game.
I actually didn't know that you blew out your knee in freshman year. I figured it was later than that.
I was 14.
That's pretty unfortunate. Now, how do you think playing for a club helps a soccer player improve, whether it be mental or through the obvious skill?
Well, it comes down to simple things. Amount of touches and time you get on the ball. level of competition that you play at and the amount of competition that you're playing. No matter how much you practice, you can never be game ready without game experience. So more tournaments and more competitions throughout the year allow you more experience to be quicker, to understand, to see, to read, to feel the ebbs and flows of a game and have that experience. Now, in anything, they say that if you put 10,000 hours into it, you will become a master. How quickly do you want to put those 10,000 hours in? And how hard do you want to work at those 10,000 hours? Do you want to just, and we've talked about this on the field, practice does not make perfect. Sloppy practice makes sloppy. Perfect practice makes perfect. So if you put in the best effort you can for those 10,000 hours with whatever it is you're doing, you will master it at the level you put into it. And that's the same with soccer in those senses of the more time you're on the ball, the more time you're playing at a higher level, the quicker you're going to get your 10,000 touches and 10,000 hours in. Absolutely, the club system helps. And there's different levels of club system, obviously, and you get more experience and different coaching at each level. And there's different styles of coaching and different styles of play. And what we play here at Mercer Island is something that we are working with the MIFC and the teams on the island to play the same and start coaching the same way we are, so that we build players that think from the time they're 6 and 5 and 6 years old, that understand the game in a different fashion other than that guy's really fast, give him the ball. Developing players, not a team. Because we're all humans and we have to survive everywhere. If we develop the person, we're doing one a greater service to society, but we're also changing the way the game is taught and thought of here in the U.S. And I put that passion into everyone I come across as best I can, because for me, in some ways, it is about the sport. I'm not a huge baseball fan or football fan or basketball fan. What I want is soccer to be number one. And if you have a good experience playing for me, you're going to tell your kids, I loved this game. Go play. And eventually soccer will rule the world.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's enough talk about soccer and the kind of deeper stuff behind it. I think it's time for us to get to know you a little bit more on a personal level. So I know that you're a big fan of rock music and kind of, I don't know what the exact word to call it would be, but who's your favorite rock band of all time? Big question.
I have a list of about maybe 50, depending on my mood.
Who would you say that you end up listening to the most?
It depends on the time of the year. But if I was going to have to nail down one that I've listened to the most consecutively, most consistently throughout my generation and time in life, I'm Black Sabbath.
I know you talked a little bit.
Old Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
Maybe the first album with Dio, but before that primarily.
I know you talked a little bit about, in the past you've talked about how you actually worked in a radio station and you started off with a blues show.
Started off with pre-drive time jazz.
And then you started to kind of change it over the course of time a little bit towards a more rock and playing Black Sabbath, so that's pretty interesting.
There was a lot of Led Zeppelin, anything that had a blues bass. And so what I was learning there was chord structuring and music theory that I had been taught from my earlier years of playing instruments. But once I started to recognize it, it's okay. There is so much that's based on the 1 flatted 3/4 chord structure that's like, okay.
Yeah.
I can fudge this.
It just kind of clicks at a certain point. Now, do you have any superstitions? I know a lot of people do various things, like if you win a game, if your favorite team wins a game, they'll wear the same clothes Or do you have any, anything that
you mean things like don't wash your jersey after you win?
Yeah, pretty much.
Don't wash out the wins?
Yeah.
I have one superstition that I developed in my playing years earlier on, and it has become something that of a ritual that I do every single day to make sure that my day goes right. Let me say that I know it's senseless and it really has no effect on life, but I still do it out of habit every single day, and that's that I put my left sock on first.
Well, there you go, guys.
Before my right sock, first.
Before the right sock.
Yeah, left sock, left shoe, right sock, right shoe. Left foot gets taken care of before the right, and I'm a right-footed person, predominantly right.
Well, there you go. Well, Bill, thank you for coming on. It was an honor having you here.
It was an honor to be here.
And guess we'll see you out on the field.
Absolutely.
It's not about the size of the transmitter. It's what you do with it that counts. 88.9 The Bridge.